afternoon. So last time, we talked about relating cache misses to actual C code that runs. So we learned sort of mechanically how our caches worked. We said, oh, we looked at the memory addresses being accessed, and that determines where we look in the cache. We look at the index part of the address to get the row. We look at the offset part of the address to find out where in the data blocks for that row. We went to look for the particular byte that's being looked at. And then we said, okay, well, you know, if we're running a C program, what's actually going on? Well, the C program accesses memory a bunch of times. We kind of mostly glossed over the accesses for accessing the machine code, though those happen. And we were more interested in the accesses for actual data. And we looked at several examples of how sort of how our cache behaves maps to arrays. And this is probably some of the more practical things to know, for one reason, because as a programmer, how you access data and things like arrays is something you have more control over than how sort of machine code is accessed, and also more likely to be a source of cases where cache performance matters because, well, you have lots of data in arrays, and when you have lots of data, that's when caches kind of do the worst because you're less likely to have temporal locality that makes the caches perform really well. Then we talked about going beyond direct map caches to set associative caches. So these set associative caches are kind of like a couple direct map caches stapled together. And we have this kind of general idea of a K-way set associative cache, which is basically we take K direct map caches and kind of put them side by side. And just like with our direct map cache, we go to a particular row with the index. But rather than looking only in one space, we look in k spaces to find our data. And each of these spaces, these blocks, has associated with it a valid bit and a tag. And we check each of those to figure out if our data is in the cache. And if it's not, we're going to put it in one of those spaces, updating the corresponding valid bit and tag. And when we have to decide where to put data, sometimes that choice isn't obvious. The most common case is we have all of our K spaces are filled with something. It's not obvious, like, why would we choose any one over another? And there's different design decisions that real caches make for this. So we need to choose what's called a replacement policy that says which block do we replace with something else. And sort of what we said, if we're thinking about locality, what the best replacement policy would be is least recently used. We learned that even though caches typically are assuming locality, they don't usually implement actual least recently used when we have lots of ways, lots of columns, because it turns out that it's pretty complicated to implement. And this is a heuristic anyways, that, you know, we're never going to have the most perfect replacement decision because the program is not going to have perfect locality, so we can't predict exactly whether, you know, the thing we're replacing will be the best thing because the program could access the quote unquote wrong thing in the future and ask for that thing re-replaced, even if sort of looking at what happened before it looked like the best decision. So our replacement policy is an approximation anyway, so often we'll kind of approximate least recently used if we're aiming for a replacement policy that supports programs with lots of locality. So questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so had some anonymous feedback. So one thing asking about explaining the role of the index in the two-way cache, it seems like a miss in index one can be put in index zero row. So I think there was some confusion between basically sets, which we drew as rows in our caches, and ways, which we drew as columns in our caches. And some of this was exacerbated by me choosing examples where the addresses we're accessing happen to alternate between sets. So it kind of looked like the address, so people weren't looking, noticing that the addresses were the reason we were doing that and thought that it was a least recently used thing. So the way we determine where to look is we always take our index, and that determines the row that we go to. And if we happen to access addresses with different indices, we'll change rows. In many of our examples, it just happened to be that we had an address with index 0, then an address with index 1, just because of how we chose those addresses. But if we chose different addresses, that wouldn't happen. And once we've chosen a row, then we have a choice of the different columns in the row as far as where to place things. That's where our replacement policy comes in. And that tells us how to make the choice. And typically, we're going to use least recently used when we can, even though in practice, maybe we'd use something that's simpler to implement. Questions on our set associative caches and distinguishing between sort of our sets, which I should write as actual S, versus our ways. So also in anonymous feedback, it seems like you're just posting a few of the lecture flies to give an excuse or invalidate our concerns. So I think it is fair to say that I am not making huge changes in the middle of this course. Maybe that's a problem. Quite possibly that's a problem. I'm just paranoid about making changes late in the course. My main reason for discussing anonymous feedback is to get more sample size and to encourage me to get it, not in just the course reviews at the end of the semester, and also to hopefully get more actionable feedback. It goes on to say, here are some examples of changes students have proposed that you've not taken. Labs are essentially a second homework, and the readings are extremely disorganized. So with respect to labs being essentially second homework, I agree the signals lab was too long because I misanticipated what was made it too long last semester and did not fix the right thing. And the make lab is sketchy as far as being long. My TAs struggled to think of other labs which had that sort of problem this semester. So if there is one or two that does, we don't know about it. My TAs didn't think any of the labs were that long. Maybe they have the wrong impression of what's going on. But like, I don't know where I would make changes if it's not signals and make that would fix that. And that doesn't really apply going, for the prior labs. On the readings being disorganized, I'm slowly working on changing the readings. I don't think completely reorganizing the readings in the middle of the semester is something I have time to do or should do. And I have guesses on what I think is disorganized in the readings. And there's a few specific things I've noticed when I've watched people do labs that were definitely a problem that I should fix for future semesters. But probably what I think is disorganized is not what you students think is disorganized. So if there's something specific that's bad in the readings, let me know, because I'm going to fix things I think are bad, and they may not be things you care about. And yes, I know I'm not like changing the course a whole lot in the middle of the semester, because there are pros and cons to that. And also, I know my anonymous feedback has a small sample size, so I'm maybe too cautious, maybe just unresponsive and not really stuck in my ways. One of those. But fair complaint, I'm not changing things that, as far as some of these things that maybe there should be more done. Or there probably should be more done on possibly like 2 months ago. Okay, so we're gonna finish up to talking about caches. And there's one topic we haven't talked about in caches that is kind of important, and that's writes. So far, we've kind of just looked at just reading values into a cache. And that's missing a lot of the sort of what caches do. You know, so it turns out, in practice, if we look at what a program does, most of the memory accesses are reads. And there's kind of two reasons for this. So one is, if we're accessing machine code, that's all reads. The second reason is that if we just look at natural data accesses, it turns out even most data accesses are reads. That you rarely write a program which mostly writes values and doesn't read many, because you have to compute the values you write anyways, and you probably read at least as many things to compute them. So typically, like, most of your accesses in a program will be reads. Like, dot guarantee, you can write a program that just writes stuff, it doesn't read anything, as far as its data, but it's not typical. And when we're deciding what to do about writes and caches, there are kind of two decision points we have. So one is, if a value is not in our cache, what do we add it to the cache? And if we answer yes to that question, which seems like the intuitive thing, because for reads, that's how we've answered the question. If the value's not in the cache, do we add it? Yeah, right away. That policy is called write allocate. But it turns out that a lot of caches do not implement that policy. Instead, they do the opposite decision. They say, no, I'm not going to add it. And this policy is called write no allocate. And we'll get into, I guess, some reasons why that you might want to choose that second policy. Even though it seems counterintuitive to our notion of caches take advantage of locality, why caches would choose that no allocate policy. And a second decision is, let's say the value is in the cache, either because it was already there, like we read it earlier, or because we decided to add it to the cache. When do we update the next level? We have kind of two decisions we can make. So one is that we can say, we're going to update it right away. And, you know, kind of the justification for this is that, well, otherwise, how is the value going to get to memory? We'd have to do some extra work to make that happen later. And that's going to require extra bookkeeping. So to avoid that, we just write it right away to the next level. And this is called write through. But we don't have to do that. We can instead decide we're going to write it later. And if we're doing this, we need to remember to write it later. Because most of our accesses are reads, we don't just want to write everything to the next level. We only want to write things that actually have changed. So we need to remember to do it. And this is only going to really help us if, you know, if this saves us doing accesses to the next level. Otherwise, we're doing the same amount of work but deferring it. So this write back policy is going to be helpful when we modify a value multiple times before we need to send it to the next level. Yes?
What do you mean by updating to the next level? What is that?
What do I mean by updating to the next level? So in our caches, we had our CPU, and we had like an L1 data cache and an L1 instruction cache, right? And the L1 data cache and the L1 instruction cache go to an L2 cache. That's sometimes shared with other CPUs, cores, and this goes to an L3, so on. So going to the next level would be going further down this hierarchy. And eventually we'll end up at going to main memory. Other questions, follow-ups? Okay, so let's look at how these policies work. So we have write allocate versus write no allocate. So let's look at write allocate. So in that case, let's say we're writing the value 10 to address ABCD, and that's not in our cache. Our cache has some stuff, but not ABCD. So what are we going to do? In this case, if a write allocate policy, we're going to add that value to the cache. But remember that when we put something in our cache, we don't just put a single byte. We put everything in a cache block. And that's typically more than the processor will read or write at a time. Because on sort of caches in like my laptop, cache blocks are typically like 64 or 128 bytes. So much more than you'd ever read or write in a single typical instruction. So to add that value to the cache, we're actually going to need to do a read from the next level to fill in the rest of the cache block. So our write turns into a read to the from the next level because we need the rest of the cache block to actually do the write allocate. So this is one reason why you might not want to have a write allocate policy in a cache, is that these reads take some time, and they're kind of only really useful if you actually end up reading from this cache block later. And, well, that depends. Some programs are going to mostly write things that they aren't going to read for a long time. If that's true, then this write allocate is wasteful. If they're going to write things that they're going to read back later, this write allocate's probably fine, probably even useful. But sort of the heuristic of how often does that happen is a way you choose between a write allocate or write no allocate policy. So with the write no allocate policy, what we're going to do instead is we're going to, the processor writes to address ABCD. The cache says, OK, I don't have that. Just going to send it up the chain. Not worry about it. And the cache will only actually start caching that value with a write no allocate policy if something from that block is read. So I should mention that this is write allocate the first. Some questions? Yes, back there. And I'll go with, yeah.
I have an idea here for the write allocate. The program writes, it only writes a cache, only puts whatever data you can put in the cache. And then when it actually exits the cache, then it finally pushes it back to RAM or whatever on the screen cache.
So the question is, when does this data actually get written to the RAM?
Yeah.
So I haven't shown how that process works for write allocate because it depends on our other decision. So if we have a write-through policy, the answer is going to be right now. If we have a write-back policy, it's going to be later. Because our write-through versus write-back decision is what do we do if the value is cached about the next level. But if the value is not cached, we don't have that decision anymore. We can't choose to not cache the value and also not write it later. You have to have it cached to write it later. Does that answer your question? So with write through versus write back, which we'll explain next, we're going to choose to, with write back, defer writing the value to the next level until later.
Yeah.
That's not something we can do unless we have the value cached, which is why it's not a decision that comes in the write no allocate case. But in the write allocate case, that is a decision that we have to make after we decide we're caching the value, and it can give us either answer depending on that decision.
Okay, depending on whether
it's cached. Yeah. Yes?
Can you elaborate on why for write allocate it like needs to jump up to the next level of cache and then read the previous level again?
Can I elaborate why we have this step three here, this reading from the next level? So when we're storing ABCD in the cache, most likely our cache has a, if we think of each row, it has a block, and the byte ABCD, the 10 we're storing, is just a part of that block. So we need to get the rest of that block in order to store it, and that is what we're transferring here. Because the only place we can get it is from the next level, because our cache shouldn't have it. And that's what we're going to spend time accessing. Does that answer your question?
I guess, but why doesn't the current cache
question, why doesn't the current cache have the rest of the block? So when we started out, our cache didn't have anything related to the address ABCD stored, probably because we haven't accessed it in a while. And so it just didn't have it. So if we're going to read it, we would have to go to the next level. In this case, we're writing it. So that gives us information about what's an address ABCD, but it doesn't tell us about the adjacent addresses because the program that's running hasn't written anything to them yet, or and possibly won't ever. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, why does the block above it have to do that? Why can't the current block just obtain the...
So question, why can't this cache obtain the values directly? It never had them. Or if it did have them, it evicted them earlier. If it had them already, we wouldn't have to make this allocate decision at all. We just say, oh, it's already in the cache. I'm going to modify what's in the cache already. But we only have this question because it's not there already. And over there, yes?
I'm kind of confused about what the allocate part means. I understand the writing portion, but where does allocate play?
Question, where does the allocate part come in? So in our no allocate version, we don't modify the cache at all. So here, in the no allocate version, you know, we have no copy of ABCD stored. So we're not making space in the cache to store that value that was just written. So that's the allocation we're not doing. In the allocate version, we are making space in that cache to store it, which means we actually allocate a whole block in the cache to store ABCD and the stuff around it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes, back there.
What is happening to the value when you write no allocate?
What is happening to the value when I write no allocate?
Yeah.
The cache forwards the write operation to the next level, and the memories are capable of writing less than a block at a time, so we're just asking to write that single byte in this case.
And that single byte's not written to the cache, it's written somewhere else in the memory?
That single byte's not written to the cache, it's written somewhere else in memory. It's written, yeah, in this example, it's written to the main memory. If we had more than one level of cache, it might be written to the next level of cache instead of the first one. Yes, over there.
Just to clarify, right, allocate is used when you're when the program knows that it's going to access that cache value sooner than later, and then right now allocate is when we're allocate.
Question, right allocate is used when we know the program's going to access that cache value sooner rather than later, and right allocate when that's not the case. So that is when we would want to use right allocate. In practice, you have to make this decision when you're building your processor, generally. So the processor is going to make a guess about which of those is more common when and decide on which one to implement in the hardware that way. Does that answer your question? Yes. Question, if ABCD is in the cache and we're doing write no allocate, do we just update the cache and stop there? If it's in the cache, the write no allocate versus write allocate doesn't matter. But what we do next, we'll talk about with our second decision, which is write through versus write back. Yes?
So for the write allocate on step 3, the values, are the values that you're reading in that A, B, C, C, and A, B, C?
So question, are the values I'm reading in the A, B, C, C, and A, B, C, E? So it depends on exactly what the blocks look like. So like if the block was, you know, let's say ABC0 through ABCF, then we would read in all of those 16 bytes except for ABCD. But what that is depends on the block size. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so you're reading in like the value that's stored at those addresses?
Question, we're reading in the value that's stored at those addresses? Yes. So basically all the value at all the other addresses in the block. Other questions? Okay, so that's on the write allocate versus write no allocate. So this is all things about what do we do if we're trying to write something and it's not in their cache. So then we have a second issue that comes up. If the value is in our cache, we need to decide what do we do about the write and refreshing the next level. So we have two options for dealing with this. So here we're having a scenario where for whatever reason, ABCD is already cached. And my question is, you know, not, since I know it's cached, what do I do about that now that I have this write to it that I need to process? So this could either be because we read ABCD or some other part of the block earlier, or it could be because we just did this write and we did the write allocate thing, and we allocated the block, So now we're storing this value, and we need to replace the FF we read from main memory at some point with the 1-0. So the write through policy says, well, we're going to replace it. We're always going to replace it. And we need to make sure main memory gets up to date somehow, or possibly more generally, the next level of cache. With write through, we just say, we're going to do that right away. We don't want to forget to update main memory and the next levels of cache, because if we did that, we might forget about the value being 1-0 instead of FF, and that would be really bad. You'd be really annoyed if you wrote to a variable like 14, and later you didn't read back that value from the variable. That would be really bad. So the simplest way of preventing that is we just always update all the cache's version of the value. Now, the problem with this is that this means that our caches kind of don't really help us that much for writes, because the point of having this cache is that it's fast. But now we're saying every time you do a write, we have to access the slow thing too. So that seems like it's going to make our program's write performance depending on the slower, high-level cache, or even main memory in this example. So an alternate policy we could have is called write back. So in this case, when the program asks to write to that value, we'll just record it in the cache, and we'll write a note to ourselves that this value is dirty. The reason we're going to write that down is that we need to remember that in the event that we stop caching that value, somewhere we need to know that the value is 1-0 and not FF. And so we're going to record this information that it's dirty, which is going to be kind of an extra bit in our cache, for one for every cache block. And based on that, we're going to know that later on we need to update the next level so we don't forget this. So the question is, when do we update the next level then? Well, we're not going to do it right away, but we have to do it eventually if this value stops being cached. So how could that happen? Well, one example is, let's say we read from another address that uses the same cache set. We look at our replacement policy and we decide, this is the block that I'm going to get rid of. So in that case, part of handling that read that needs to bring in address 11CD in this case is going to be to get rid of address ABCD from the cache. And previously, the way we got rid of a value from the cache is we just changed its bits. But that's not going to be enough anymore. Now we need to check, is this value dirty? Is it something that we modified without cleaning it up in the next level yet? And if so, well, we need to make it undirty first by cleaning up the next level to have it know that's 1-0, it's not FF. So we'll do the write then. And after we handle that, doing that, then we can actually read in the new value to replace that block. And here I'm showing us writing a single byte. So here this is going to be actually a whole block. Write the block. Whole block and read a whole block, because our cache works in blocks, not single bytes, most likely. Yes?
What's the benefit of this approach?
Question, what's the benefit of this approach? The main benefit is that often we won't just be writing 1-0 to ABCD, we'll be writing a whole bunch of things. So like think of modifying like a global variable in a loop or something like that, or something on the stack in a loop. In that case, we'll have a whole bunch of writes, and often we can deal with all those writes without ever going to the next level, and only when we're all done do we have to actually go to the next level. And so we end up doing a lot fewer accesses to the next level. Does that answer your question? Yes.
When you say write down to the next level, say there's like three levels, would it just write from 1 to 2 and then even in 2 it wouldn't pass anymore?
So the question is, how does this work if we have more than two levels? So each cache is going to have its own write allocate policy and its own write back or write through policy. And they'll make these decisions independently. So basically, if our RAM is instead another cache, that other cache, it's going to say, oh, am I doing write allocate or write no allocate? And based on that, it's going to decide, do I store this at all? Or do I just forward it? And then it's going to say, am I doing write back or write through? So it's going to apply the same decisions again. So potentially, we could have like the value be, you know, step kept in the L1 cache for a while, then sent to the L2. And if the L2 is also write back, it might keep the value until it evicts it later. Does that answer your question? Was there a question over here? Okay. Yeah, I would say, as far as multiple levels, typically if you look at what real processors do, often they'll have something like where there's a write-back cache, and the caches that are, like the L2 cache might be write-back and the L1 would be write-through, or something like that is a common design choice, but it's not the only one. But yeah, common to have it set up such that there's not sort of multiple layers of write-back caches in a typical sort of access. Other questions? Yes. So if we're implementing write-back, we're going to have to make the decision when we build our cache to actually have storage for the extra bookkeeping information in order to support that. And that's going to mean that we're going to have an extra bit of information for every single block to remember if it's dirty. And generally, we're only going to store whether the whole block is dirty, because although we could do bookkeeping saying which bytes have changed, that's generally not considered worthwhile. So we'll just say the block is dirty or it isn't. Yes?
Wait, sorry, can you go back one slide? I want to ask, so if step two here doesn't happen, how does the value actually reach memory?
So the question is, what if we never read something that conflicts? What if there's no reason to evict the value from the cache? In that case, we would never do it. And on a single core, this isn't a problem, because the only way we can access the value is by going through this cache, so we'll never notice there's anything wrong. On a multi-core, you might say, yes, there's a problem, and there's some way we're going to have to deal with keeping things in sync on a multi-core. We're not going to talk about that in this class, but basically there's going to be some way that the caches can figure out who has the value and get it. Yes?
So you're basically like with write back, are you delaying when you're actually writing it?
With write back, am I delaying when I actually write it in memory? Yes. So in this example, we didn't write it until we had to evict it much later.
And the point of that is that there's some kind of benefit to putting it in cache in case you want to read it?
Question, is the point of that there's some kind of benefit to keeping it in cache in case you want to read it? No, that was the point of write allocate. But with write back, because we still have that benefit if we cached it and sent it to the next level right away. The benefit is that if it's written more, or other things from the block are written, we're going to save accesses to the next level. That with the write-through policy, where we always send it to the next level right away, we do that lots of times potentially here. We're only going to do it sort of basically the minimum possible number of times. Does that answer your question? Yes.
So is write-through like essentially safer? I'm wondering like what the other benefit for it. Because it just seems like it would overall be slower, but you do get the memory to a safe like a location that might be more permanent.
So the question is, what's the advantage of implementing write-through? Probably the biggest advantage is we have less bookkeeping. And the logic is also simpler in that we don't have to implement something that does a write on a read. And worry about that. And the performance difference, so it seems like there'd be a lot of performance difference. Processors in practice kind of mitigate this by having what's known as a write buffer on the cache. So the cache will basically have a little mini cache of things that are being written right now. And as long as things are in that cache, like we can kind of do the write in the background. So with this strategy, as long as we aren't doing too many writes, as long as we don't fill up this buffer of pending writes, you know, we won't notice the performance impact of write-through. The only problem is if we're writing too much stuff, then that buffer will fill up and we'll have to stall the program while we have some writes finish. Does that answer your question? Other questions? So let's do a little exercise. So I have a cache here, and my cache has 2 byte blocks, so one offset bit and one index bit. And I'm asking which of these accesses would result in reading or writing from the next level of cache. And I'll help us out by saying that address 33 ends with 11. And so this is offset 1, index 1. 52 is offset 0, index 1. And 50 is offset 0, index 0. And we're looking at these independently, so it's not a cumulative question. Okay, who'd like some more time? So here. Who'd like some more time still? Okay, so let's start with the first thing, riding a bike to address 3-3. So who thinks we need to do a read from the next level to do this? How about a write? Well, no clue? People? Okay. So start with that. I get no read or write. So what happens on this axis? So if we look in set one here, 3-3's already stored here. So we're going to update that. And we do that regardless of what our write policy is. So we're telling you at the top, this is write allocate, write back. But it doesn't matter what the policy is. If it's in the cache, we better update it. You would be really annoyed if you like set x equals 1 and then x was 0. Like, that should never happen. So we need to update what's in the cache. So if you read back 3-3, you'll get the value you just wrote. So we're always going to update the value. And also, it happens that we do update the LRU because now the least recently used is in way 0, the first column, not way 1. But we don't actually do a write to the next level, and that's because of our write back policy. So the write back policy says to do the write, we're going to modify what the value is, as usual. We always do that, no matter what. And we're going to set this dirty bit to 1. So we set this dirty bit to 1. Oops, already was. So we just keep it at 1. And sometime later, we're going to remember, oh, I need to write that back, but that hasn't happened yet. Yes?
Just changing, so you're saying that changing the LRU bit does not count as a write?
Question, changing the LRU bit does not count as a write? It doesn't count as a write to the next level. Yes, we're modifying this cache, we're not modifying the next cache. So, and we were asking about to next level, which I just didn't record on this slide. Yes?
So I guess follow-up question. If say one of those reads that resulted in a miss and you had to write new data to the cache, but for this question that still wouldn't be a write because it's at this level?
Question, if we had to read something in and store it in this cache, that still wouldn't be a write? Yes, we're only talking about reads and writes to the next level. So this write definitely turns into a write to this cache, but that's not. And it's modification of like two things, right? Our value and our LRU, but it doesn't turn into a modification to the next level. The next level won't know about this write until much later. Or potentially much later. Other questions up there?
Why is the LRU changing
if you're still in the second block? Why is the LRU changing? So the LRU points to the least recently used way. And if we're thinking about, I just used this block here, so it shouldn't be least recently used anymore. But our indices that we're using are 0 and 1. Yes?
So if it was already marked as dirty, why wouldn't you have to write those previous values?
So given that it's already marked as dirty, why aren't we writing it to the memory? So the place when we write values that are dirty is when we're getting rid of the dirty value from our cache entirely. So we're happy having dirty values cached and not doing anything about them until the last possible moment. The last possible moment is if we forget about that value otherwise. So here, we're not forgetting about the value, we have it. It's going to get to the next level eventually. So the only problem is when we can no longer satisfy that promise, which is going to be when we replace it with something else. Does that answer your question?
So
the question, aren't I replacing that value with something else? Yes, and that value, we're just going to forget about the other value. So let's say I change x to 1, then 2, then 3. With a write-back policy, we can just not send the 1 and 2 to the to some of the memories or caches. And that's fine as long as they get the 3. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
So what if it was like 3 to byte from 3 to, then what do you have to write to the next level?
Question, if I was reading a byte from 3 to, would I have to write to the next level? Nope.
I thought if we're reading from the same block.
If we're reading from this block, if we want to read from a block that's dirty, it doesn't affect anything.
I thought that's when they write it in memory.
Isn't that when we write to memory? So we write to memory if we're going to make this go outside of the cache. So on a read, if something's in our cache already, we don't need to change anything. The issue is going to be with probably one of these other examples where we might need to replace something. So speaking of that, let's go to our second item here, unless there's more questions that I on the first one. Okay, so let's do reading a byte from address 5-2. So who thinks this requires a read from the next level? Thinks this requires a write to the next level? No clue. Okay, so mostly yes, a read and a write. That matches what I get. So we're starting out with the initial state here. So the least recently used way is here. So this is what we have to replace. So we're going to replace that, and the process of replacing this is that first we have to make sure that if we're replacing something that's dirty, that we don't forget about it. If we just overwrite that, now the modifications we've made to 3.2 or 3.3, if any, will be totally forgotten about. So we'll first write back those values, and then we'll store our new values, which are for 5.2 and 5.3, the rest of that block, in there. And since we just read them, we're going to set the dirty bit to 0 because we haven't modified those values since we got them from the next level. So if, for example, I then read something that required us to replace those values again and not cache 5.2 and 5.3, we wouldn't need to send it to the next level. It's already, that next level is already all set. Yes, over there.
So do you start by like disassembling that hex 5.2 to binary and then looking at the tag and the index and offset and stuff?
Question, do I start by disassembling the hex 5.2 to binary and looking at the tag, index, and offset? Yes. So I would say I figure out that it's in set 1, so I go to this row here and I would check both of the tags, and it happens neither of them match. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Okay. So then why am I writing it there?
So just as we talked about last time, on a read, we bring the value into the cache. So we need to cache address 5.2. To do that, we have to put it in set 1, that row. And as for where do I put it, well, we had an LRU policy. Least recently used was 1, so it goes here.
But one of them is 30, so you have to write what's there at the next level.
It's a question, do I have to write what's there at the next level? Yes, because it's marked dirty, I do. If it was not marked dirty, for example, if the LRU said 0 here, I would not have to do that.
So no matter what, you're going to read 5.2, but it's just a matter of if you have to write in the case of there being dirty.
So the question is, no matter what I have to read 5.2, it's just a matter if I also have to write back something old? Yes. And yes, next to the wall.
Does any of the other cache lines get this LRU bit of 1 afterwards?
Question, what happens to the LRU bit? So the LRU bit always needs to reflect, tell us like which of the ways was accessed least recently. So in this case, with the two ways, we just need 1 bit for that. If we had like 3, we need to actually store the order. And I'm updating it here because now that I've put something in way 1, way 0 is now the least recently used thing in this row. And it's independent for each row. Other questions? Okay, how about our last example, reading from 5.0? So who thinks this requires a write to the next level? Okay, who thinks this requires a read from the next level? And how about no clue? Okay, so most people say a read and not a write, and that's what I get. So when I think of what happens here, we're gonna look at our set is 0, so it goes in this row here. And the least recently used thing is way 0, so that's where we're gonna put it. We're gonna put it replacing this 3.0 and 3.1, and we have to get rid of those. But they're not dirty. We haven't written to them since we retrieved them from the next level. So we don't need to do anything to get rid of them other than just overwrite their values. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to overwrite their values by reading in 5.0 and 5.1 from the next level. Yeah?
Why did you replace index 1 offset
6? Why did I?
Why did you replace 6.2 and
6.3 in 5.1? Why did I place 6.2 and 6.3 in? What I do it there, because this address, when I decoded it into my site index and offset, had index bits of 0, so it has to go in the row with index 0. So if I look at this address, it ends in, it's 1010000. This is our offset bit, and this is our index bit, and it has to match up with here, so it has to go in the first row. Does that answer your question? And way up there.
Does 30 bit being 0 mean that the cache's value has already been written to the main memory?
Question, does 30 bit being 0 mean the cache's value has already been written to the main memory? It generally means that main memory, that the value hasn't changed since it was read from the next level.
Okay.
Yes, over there.
So how did you choose between the two ways again?
How did I choose between the two ways? I looked at the least recently used part. So this told me that the way 0 was the one that has been accessed least recently. So for example, maybe what happened is we just modified 4.0 or read from 4.0, and that meant that 3.0 is the better thing to replace. Does that answer your question?
So you only need as many bits to, let's represent LRU as there are ways, right?
Question, I only need as many bits to represent LRU as there are ways. Not in general. With two ways, I only need one bit. But if I had three or four, it gets a lot more complicated. Because I actually need to remember not only what the least recently used is, but the second least recently used, and the third least recently used, and so on. So I know what to replace, If I do four different things, I need to know what's the sequence of things I need to replace. But with two ways, I only need one bit for that, because if 0 is the least recently used, 1's the second least recently used, and that's all I have all the information. Other questions? Yeah. Question, are the dirty bit and least recently used bit stored in the cache? Yes. So sometimes real caches will be organized physically. They'll have like two separate kind of arrays of storage, one for metadata, like tags and dirty bits and valid bits, and one for the actual data. So sometimes they'll be physically separate, but it's all part of the cache. Okay, so not seeing other questions. So one more topic for today. Oh, I should probably, before we finish up, like normal memory caches, we've talked about a bunch of design decisions, and I want to mention briefly, what processors actually choose is always kind of a trade-off, right? We can make caches have lots of hits by making them hit slower. We can make, hashes have more hits by making misses slower, by like increasing the block size. So there's all these trade-offs that decide how big are the caches, how big are the blocks in the caches, how many sets do we have, how many ways do we have. And this also depends on what programs we're running. Like, because how much do we actually have locality happening? How much do we have cases where the index bits happen to match up and we really want to have more ways? And what processor manufacturers do in practice generally is simulations, that they'll take a bunch of programs they think are interesting and simulate what the cache performance is like and use that to decide whether they go from, you know, for a 32 kilobyte or 64 kilobyte cache and things like that. Okay, so we're going to talk about one very specialized type of cache, and that's with our page table lookup. So in our page table lookup, we have to do multiple accesses to memory. So if we're thinking of our translate function with levels greater than one, we're doing at least three accesses to actually access one value in memory. We have to access the first level page table entry, the second, and on like my laptop, it turns out there's four levels of page tables, so I have to access five things to access one value in my program. So I'm reading X from memory, I'm actually reading a first level page table entry, a second level page table entry, a third, and a fourth, and that would be really slow. So we want caches to speed this up, and it speeds it up somewhat that when we're accessing those page table memory and page table entries, we use the cache, but that's still not good enough. Because typically an L1 cache has a latency of like 2 to 3 cycles, so doing four accesses is an extra like 8 cycles. That's huge. So we want to solve this by having a specialized cache. This is what our modern processors have, a special cache just to speed up page table lookups. And the reason why this is practical is that accesses to page table lookups have even better locality than typical program memory accesses. They have super good locality. And the reason why, so I think about what my program's doing at any point of time, I'm accessing like part of the stack, part of the heap, maybe where there's some RAM working on or something, and some of my code. There's actually, you know, these little regions of memory. There might be thousands of bytes in them, but the number of pages in each of these is only a few. So probably there's only like a few pages of the stack I'm accessing and a few pages of the heap if I'm working on like a big array on the heap and a few pages of code that stores my machine code. So we only need like, you know, tens of things, page table entries stored. And we'll have excellent locality. Almost all of our accesses will hit these 1 of 10 things. Way better than our normal caches. So to exploit this, processors have a page table entry cache, which is called for reasons of IBM choosing interesting names back in the 60s, 70s. A translation look-aside buffer, or TLB. So this is a very small cache of page table entries. So our L1 cache, our normal memory cache, we put in physical addresses, and we get bytes. For this cache, we're not going to put in a physical address. Instead, we're going to put in a full virtual page number. So this cache is going to do the whole, cache the results of the whole page table lookup. So it's not going to tell, it's going to tell us, here's the last level page table entry. For this virtual page number. And because typically pages are pretty, so that's what we're going to do. So just, we're going to cache the whole page table lookup, just generally the last level page table entry. And this means that when we're looking up things in this cache, we're going to divide up our virtual page number into an index and a tag. And because typically if we're accessing one virtual page, you know, that's pretty big, it's not actually a very good indicator we're accessing adjacent virtual pages, our cache blocks are going to be hold just one page table entry, which means we have no offset bits. So there's no offset bits in these TLBs. We just have a tag and an index, and those come from the virtual page number. And because we have excellent locality in our page table entries, we'll typically have a pretty small number of entries in these TLBs. So usually the first level TLBs have like tens of entries. And that does pretty good. And because our TLB stores last level page table entries, it can kind of be used to like shortcut the whole page table lookup process. So on a TLB hit, we won't do all that memory access. We'll just take our virtual page number, put it in the TLB, and we'll get out a page table entry, get the physical page number from that, and we're done. And this is what makes the performance of virtual memory acceptable. Because this happens well over 99% of the time. And we don't do that whole complicated lookup. Yes?
So if it wants to write to one of these pages that is inside the transition type buffer, does it behave the same way that the other caches behave? Or since it has like no offset bits, it just gives back the table entries? Is the program expected to like modify the page itself?
So the question is, what happens when we're modifying pages? So I guess there's two things. So this is the translation. So the thing stored in here is not the actual pages, but the page table entry, so just the physical page number. So the actual data from the page, if that changes, doesn't change what's in the TLB. Like if it's stored in physical page 50, and we modify physical page 50, it's still stored in physical page 50, TLB is up to date. Now, if the OS wants to edit the page table, then we have to worry about something. And unlike our normal caches, the policy for that on most processors is that it's the OS's job to make sure the TLB is in sync. And there's a special instruction the OS can run to remove things from the TLB. And if the OS doesn't do that, weird things will happen. This is something we're OK with doing for the TLB because we know only the OS deals with page tables. And we can trust the OS to be working carefully to not let the TLB get out of sync with the page tables. Yes? Can I go over why the TLB has such good locality? If we think of a typical function we're running, you know, typically we're accessing a couple pages of stack because that's like many kilobytes of stack. That's a lot of stuff we have to put on the stack. Typically only a couple pages worth of code, that's kilobytes of code, right? That's a pretty big function in machine code. And typically, most functions, even if we're accessing like an array, that array like probably fits in a few kilobytes most of the time. There's only a few pages of code. So obviously, there are exceptions here. I can write a program that has horrible locality in the TLB, but typical programs have really, really good locality in the TLB, which makes them have really high hit rates. That answer your question? Other questions? Through. So in a cache hit in the TLB, we'll do this. We'll just kind of shortcut the whole lookup process. On a miss, we'll do the lookup process. And in addition to using the result of the lookup to finish our memory access, we'll store it in our TLB. That's how things get added to the TLB. Questions? And as far as what a TLB lookup, so I mentioned that we're going to take our virtual page number and we're going to divide it up into an index and a tag. So our cache will basically look like a typical set associative cache, where index comes from the lower bits of our virtual page number, and the tag is the rest of the virtual page number. We do the same matching process of check if the tag from the virtual page number matches the tag we find in our cache. And what we get out is a page table entry. So we get out a physical page number and all the permission bits and so on. Generally, we won't store invalid page table entries at all, because we'll have to ask the OS what to do about those anyways. So we don't even need to store the valid bit technically, but we have a valid bit in our cache blocks just like in a normal cache. And we get out this page table entry and just use it as if we read it from memory in the last level page table. So questions? TLB lookup. Yes? How do they get the tag of 1011? Here, so this TLB has apparently three index bits, which means that this must be 8 rows in order to need 3 index bits, because it's 0, 0, 0 to 1, 1, 1, 1, or 3 ones. And that's how we know how many index bits there are, and the tag is everything before that in the virtual page number. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Kind of. So, like with our normal caches, the number of index bits is based on how many sets the cache has. So we need to have been told that. And that's how I would know how many index bits are in the virtual page number. And I'm always dividing my virtual page number into an index and a tag.
I understand that. I'm just confused because you have the tag.
Oh, question is, why do I have this highlighted when it doesn't match here? So the actual thing we look up with that address is this page table entry. I'm just pointing out that every block is a page table entry. So that is, but I'm not saying that that's the result of the lookup. So, and probably should use the other example given the slide, yes. Other questions, comments? Okay, so let's do a little exercise here. So let's say I have a 4 entry, so it stores 4 page table entries, 2-way TLB, with an ORU replacement policy, and I have 4,096 byte pages. So how many index bits does this have? Let's start with that. So one way of thinking about this is we can kind of draw out what this looks like. So I have 2 columns, 2 ways. So way 0 and way 1. And among them, I have 4 total entries, so 4 blocks for the purpose of a TLB. And that means there must be 2 in each way to have 4 total. So 4 in total, which means I have 2 sets. Yes? How did I get 2 sets? So I have 2 ways with 4 entries in total. That means that each way has 2 entries to have the 4 in total. And if a way is a column, so if I have 2 rows in that column, that's 2 sets. That still seems unclear, so. Like, the big thing is it's a 2-way cache, so I need to have 2 columns, and there's 4 entries, so I have my 1, 2, 3, 4 entries I can store here. And to make that divided up in 2 ways, I have 2 rows, which are 2 sets. So that ends up with set 0 and set 1, I have 1 index bit. So my question is, what is the index bit if we're trying to access the address 12345? Who'd like some more time? Okay, a bunch of people. So in the interest of explaining this before the class finishes, let's see. So who thinks we should get a 0? Thinks we should have a 1? Thinks no clue? So that is more of an even split than I like. So let's log out. So we have this address, this virtual address, 12345. And when we're doing our page table lookup, we divide this address into two pieces. We have our page offset, and this, the TLB doesn't see. That's because it's not part of getting a page table entry, it's only the last step. So the part that TLB sees is this other part, the virtual page number. And we're going to feed the whole virtual page number, no matter how many levels we have, to the TLB. And the TLB is going to divide it up into a tag and an index. And in this case, we have one index bit. So this 0 here is the index. Is the index. And everything else is the tag. So questions about how I figured that out? Okay, so that's where we'll finish up this time. So next time we'll talk about threads, which I'd hope to get to today, but lots of questions, so do it tomorrow. Do it Thursday.